Hi, it's Emma Bell here. But I wanted to just say, I got some advice for you. If you see something or you hear something that doesn't sound or seem right, don't go out there.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Destin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network, so there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. Super excited to continue with the first season of The Walking Dead, episodes 3 and 4. I had a really good time reviewing the first two episodes, and I know Brian has because I'll just let him announce how far he's already gotten into the damn series.
Yeah, I was going to say I have a confession to make right off the rip because I'm weak. I admit it. I got two into the show, and I couldn't go week by week like I wanted to. And in the week that we've recorded, I'm now in season 4 of the show. Actually, more notably, I only have 3 episodes left in season 4, so... Now, the show did hit that 16-episode season, you know, starting in season 3. So that's going to slow me down a little bit. But, I guess, just tells you where I stand on the show and more relatively, I guess, this season since I continued on with it. There are some episodes so far I've come across slower than others, maybe getting into those, quote, filler episode category. But definitely none so far in season 1. I'm already thinking about really when to pick season 2 of this, so. Now we have other shows I want to do first, but I'm ready to go.
I ain't mad at him. I liked episodes 3 and 4. They weren't as good as the first two, but 3 and 4 were still good. Like we were rating them individually, they'd still probably be at about an 8 or higher for me. So definitely not bad episodes by any means. But it's that first episode, you know, got me hooked so good, and my man Morgan was so emotional. I really loved that first episode. So, yeah, I'm excited to do the scene by scene tonight. Dustin, what do you think of 3 and 4 before we jump into it?
Yeah, first of all, Brian, it really warms my heart that you're so invested in the show and already almost into season 5. Like I said, the first 4 seasons to me are great. But as far as the episode 3 and 4 of season 1, I agree with you, Nico. I don't like them as much as episodes 1 and 2, but I do still like them. I think that there's a lot of character development in these episodes. And Brian, I think you can speak to this, like a lot of stuff that happens in these episodes sets us up even more for the rest of the season or the rest of the show. So they're necessary, I feel like. And you know, if I were to rate these individually, which I did, so just like Haunting of Hill House, I gave everyone an individual rating. First two episodes to me, I gave them a 10. I love them. These episodes, I'm at about an 8.5 for episode 3 and about a 9 for episode 4. So I still really like them. That's probably biased because I'm so such a big fan of this show, particularly this first season.
Very fair. I couldn't argue with that at all. Let's jump into the scene by scene for episode 3, Tell It to the Frogs. The episode starts with Merle talking shit alone on the roof, possibly going delusional. He snaps out of it and panics and begins kicking the pipe he's handcuffed to, crying out to Jesus. Shit hits the fan once walkers appear at the door. He prays for forgiveness, admitting he deserves it. He's been bad. He quickly stops begging to Christ and uses his belt to reach for tools to get free. Grimes is driving the van away as Morales says not to feel bad. No one will miss him, except maybe his brother Daryl, as Glenn speeds by hooting and hollering. Lori is cutting her son's hair as Shane tells him shaving sucks and is going to teach him to catch frogs. Carl asks why they have to catch frogs. Shane says they're scrumptious. Dale sees something in the distance as Glenn driving the red Challenger. Glenn arrives and pops the hood so they can turn the alarm off. Shane is frustrated. He accuses Glenn of drawing every walker towards them with this noise. The van arrives and Amy and Andrea cry, reuniting. Morales hugs his family. Shane asks how they got out. Glenn says new guy as Grimes walks up. Shane, Lori, and Carl all have shocked faces until Carl runs to his father and into his arms. Lori hugs his neck but gives Shane an awkward look until she cries. They're around a campfire now and Grimes tells his story. Carl says, Mom said you were dead. Shane says he barely got Lori and Carl out. Grimes thanks Shane as Lori gives an awkward look. Shane snaps on Ed for making the fire too big and noticeable. Dale asks about Daryl and his brother being left behind. Andrew says it's Merle's own fault he got left behind. T-Dog says Merle's still alive. That's on us, and walks away. All right, Brian, that's the first set of scenes. What'd you think?
So right off the bat here, let me just talk about something. Like, my review talk, I feel like, will definitely change being through almost four seasons now. But, I mean, I'm not going to spoil it or anything like that. But with all these seasons, and because it's well-written, I mean, there are – you kind of mentioned this. You kind of touched on this, Dustin. I mean, there are character arcs that go through a lot of progressions. And I'll just say, for the ones that get somewhat redemption arcs, that challenges me personally, who, like I've said before, I really hold grudges. But I'll just say the show is successful in some cases and not in some cases when it comes to me anyway.
Real quick, it's funny you said mm-hmm. that because I don't have this in my notes, but it's something I thought about. Like in real world, in society, mm-hmm. people don't give second chances. It's like once you make a mistake or once you show your quote unquote true colors, people hold that over your head forever. But really getting invested into a show like this that does so much back and forth with their characters, like it really right. challenges you that. And so you can learn a lot from the show, I feel like.
It does. That's something I've definitely struggled with my personal life, my entire life. So, but anyway, with Merle, at the start of this, a couple of fun facts, and you know, not to spoil the end of the episode or anything, but in the comics, it was actually Rick who lost his hand and not Merle. But did Merle even really have to lose his hand? I mean, he has a hacksaw. Could the guy have not just cut the bolt on the handcuffs? Would that have not been easier and honestly more likely to be successful than cutting his hand off? I mean, maybe it was, you know, that panic with the walkers and whatnot, but it's just what crossed my mind anyway. I mean, great acting, though, regardless from Rooker, and he's amazing as always. Go ahead.
Sorry. He did say, Daryl did say, I guess the blade was too dull to cut through the metal. Daryl said that. Well, so, I mean.
But was that just an assumption? I don't know. I mean, it's just
you're right. Yeah.
But I mean, it could have just been panic, too. I mean, that's just, you know, a little, just something I threw out there for food for thought, what went through my mind anyway. True or not true, I didn't think it was an error or anything, just, you know, something went through my mind. We finally do get that reunion that I was so glad. I talked about last episode that they didn't draw out longer than these first two. I'm so glad about that. I do have to ask why, at first, Carl and Lori both seemed super upset that Rick didn't emerge from the van. Did you guys notice that? Like, why would that be if they're under the impression Rick is dead and been told that he's dead? So I kind of think, I don't know, with the new director every episode, I do wonder if there wasn't, especially this early on, well, if there wasn't communication in regards to that kind of stuff. Because, you know, to me, that doesn't make sense. You know, and when they both see Rick, Carl takes off for him. And it's if you notice, it's like Lori tries to stop him. And, you know, if you watch again, it's just something that popped up to me. What sense does that make? It really doesn't make sense to me. But just so much loaded dialogue, you know, with what you know is happening with Lori and Shane. And then you have Rick trying to express that he has no words to thank Shane for keeping Carl and Lori safe. And then you have Dale with a great line here. There goes words falling short again. So very, very loaded set of scenes there.
Yeah, so one thing the series does really well to me is how they dive back into a character after moving away from them for a while. So I like that we just open with Merle here, throws us right back into his situation. And I like the look that we get at him on the roof there. He's clearly losing his mind before he snaps back to reality. you know, the harsh reality that he was left on this roof. And then the idiot's noise attracted the walkers. Like if he'd just, you know, shut up, maybe he wouldn't have had to panic like that. Could have thought it through some more, but yeah. It looks like he's done for, but luckily he finds a John Kramer way out. It's a very tense open. And then on the other side of the opening credits, we cut to Rick and Morales, and we find out that Merle has a brother. Great way to meet a fan favorite character. I think it's unanimous, the best character in the show. Whole time, Shane is trying to be buddy-buddy with Carl. It's touching. Still hate him. Glenn pulling up in the Challenger.
Right.
Man, why the fuck did he not ditch that car? Did he really think a loud-ass car alarm would be a good thing to bring back to camp? Now, I get what Dale said there about how with the echoing all over the hills, there's no way they could hone in on the sound. No, fuck that. That's a risk you cannot take. It's a heart-pounding moment when Rick pulls up and he's reunited with Lori. Man, imagine the range of emotions you'd feel in that moment. Like, I get chills every single time. It's kind of funny watching Lori here. Her look shows some relief that Rick's alive, but it also screams, oh, shit.
Yeah, and
Rick
exactly.
Telling, like, it was wild. Rick telling Shane how grateful he is, that had to feel like a knife to the gut from Shane. Like, right. even if he doesn't regret it, and even if he had, you know, designs on Lori the whole time, that's still your friend. I still got to, you know, if you got a conscience, you got to feel bad about that.
Right.
And then a character that I forget about often when I do these rewatches is I almost forgot about Ed completely and how much he sucked. I know that the living should probably stick together here, but I definitely would have exiled his punk ass. Very good opening set of scenes to me.
Yeah, very good opening. Grimes talks to Carl, I found you and I love you. He walks over to Lori and lies down with her, kissing her. He says he knew they were alive and he'd find them. She embraces him, cries, and gets the photo album. Grimes puts the photo from his shirt in the album as she says, I thought I'd never see you again. I'm so sorry. Grimes says maybe they have a second chance. Not everyone gets that as the thunder rolls. Lori dims the light so they can hunch, but she can't shake a guilty look on her face. Shane watches their tent in frustration. Grimes wakes up and joins the others. He's thankful for getting his clothes washed and joins Glenn, who is sad his car is getting torn to pieces for supplies. Lori asks him if he slept well. He expresses concern about the man they left behind as Shane arrives swiftly with water. Carl lets out a blood-curdling scream and the others run to his aid. We see a walker eating a deer corpse. They begin bludgeoning him until Dale cuts his head off. They're concerned one's gotten so far up here until they hear leaves rustling. It's Daryl, whose pissed deer got stolen by the walker. Daryl puts an arrow through the walker's skull to kill its brain. Daryl calls Merle's name, but no answer. Shane stops Daryl to tell him about Merle's problem in Atlanta. Grimes tells Daryl what he did to Merle on the roof. Daryl pulls a knife on them until Shane puts him in a headlock. Grimes asks if they can have a manageable conversation. T-Dog admits he dropped the key in a drain and his brother is still alive, most likely. Lori volunteers Grimes to show Daryl where his brother is at. He gets his sheriff's uniform back on, and Shane asks why he risks his life for a douchebag like Merle. Rick says there's no way to let anything die, especially a human. Rick asks Glenn to join, and T-Dog volunteers to go as well. Shane is frustrated, and Rick tells him of all the guns they left behind they could get. Lori and Carl don't want him to go, not for Merle. Grimes tells her he owes Morgan and Dwayne. He needs that bag. All right, Brian's next set of scenes, what'd you think?
So, Gwyneth Horder-Payton directed this one. She's pretty much stuck to TV in her career, American Horror Story. She directed 6 episodes of Longmire as well. She's been pretty much working steady, I would say. But there's nothing really stand out about the direction or really cinematography in this one. But more importantly, nothing stood out as bad. There was a shot of Ed and Shane through the fire in the last set of scenes and the embers kind of talking that I really liked. But most of all, there's a lot of cuts, and I think that's super good. Because there's a lot of talking in this episode. And to me, those cuts are super important to not let the scene get boring visually. I think she did a very good job. Lincoln and Sarah Callies, again, just do a fantastic job as well of delivering the emotion that they need to. Callies especially, as she has to portray that conflict that you talked about, the guilt of just being the worst, and does an amazing job of it, I have to say. Dale is another character that is just, it's hard to explain. I mean, he doesn't have some grand lines really or anything, but it's Jeffrey DeMunn's delivery, which yeah. I don't know if we talked about last episode about DeMunn being a horror legend. I mean, he's in The Blob, The Green Mile, The Hitcher, The Mist. You know, if we did talk about that, I don't recall. But I feel like his character, I feel like could have really been unlikable. But DeMunn's delivery of his lines is what sells him to me anyway. Again, hard to explain, but he's very, very good. Casting directors Sharon Biley and Sherry Thomas, just slow clap. Amazing work there. We also get a little cameo here as well, as Greg Nicotero is actually the walker who's eating the deer in the set of scenes. Don't even have to talk about how awesome the special effects are anymore. I think just if you're listening, assume they're fantastic unless otherwise noted. And lastly, you know, you mentioned it. We get Daryl's introduction. Again, just perfect casting. I mean, there's something about Daryl I've noticed. I don't know if they tried to not make him very likable at first, but Reedus never changes anything about the approach to playing him. And I personally like the guy from the start. So even though he is kind of a dick, but I don't know, I really like him. One thing I felt out of place, though, I mean, he was pissed. He was trying to fight. And then Shane gave him that chokehold, and he says, hey, chokeholding is illegal. Like, to me, that just felt a little cheesy. It felt a little out of place. Comedy to me in that situation just felt a little bit out of place. But that's the only nitpick I had on that set of scenes.
So before I start with that, you mentioned Dale. I agree with you. Like, his character had a lot of potential to be just hated. But I think that the way it was acted made it tolerable, especially later, you know, more than what Nico's seen, when he starts to try to be the dad and the old wise man in the group knows best. It's like, you could have hated him, but I couldn't. I didn't. So first of all, Rick and Lori one up the whole fucking in the kitchen thing that I mentioned on that one episode. These horny perverts fuck in the tent while Carl is right there. Unbelievable, man.
I can't
say also, also, if my timeline is right, and I may be wrong, but is this not the same day that her and Shane had the romp in the woods there?
Oh.
So Lori is one nasty girl. Two little Debbies in one day? Yuck.
Oh, yuck. God damn. Yes.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Having watched the whole show, it's really cool seeing Rick and Carol's first interaction when she washed his clothes. It's wild how far their relationship and dynamic evolves. Like, she's got a great character arc too. She goes from this meek and humble and really cowardly woman to something that I don't even know if you've fully experienced yet, Brian, in your watch, but it's cool. Shane was absolutely haul-assing in that Jeep with the water. Jesus, man, slow down. There's kids in the camp. You got to be more careful. When the kids find the walker eating the deer, I laughed watching the group beat the absolute shit out of it. It's like, I don't even think they were trying to kill it. They were just taking out their frustrations. They beat the fuck out of that walker. But then something that bothers me, like, it bothers the hell out of me, honestly. Daryl uses his crossbow for hunting, right? But then he shoots the walker with an arrow in the brain. Yet when he was asking, can we salvage this deer? Can we cut around the bites? They said, no, you can't risk it. But he's just going to reuse the arrow. Make that make sense. True. I don't know. That bothers me. It's in the details.
Maybe he's got some hand sanitizer in his pants all the time.
Yeah, it keeps that Purell on him. I did get a good laugh. I did get a good laugh at Daryl after he pulls a knife during the fight and he tells Shane chokehold's illegal. And Shane's response was even better. Yeah, well, file a complaint. Like, I know how you feel about the comedy, but I liked it because it's like, once you're getting your ass kicked, what else can you do? Like, try to ease the situation, laugh about it. But Shane's follow-up with Daryl was just as good, though, when he said, choose your words wisely. And Shane says, no, I did. Douchebag is what I meant. That was funny. That's the best thing Shane does in the whole show. And then last thing I have is, I love the look on Glenn's face when he found out that he had to go back for Merle. Like, it was great. He's like, oh, you got to be shitting me. Like, I love that. So, this is a fun set of scenes.
All right, guys, here's the ending for this episode. Grimes asks for bolt cutters to cut the chain and lock, and Dale isn't thrilled to lend them out. Dale says he wants one of the guns, his pick. Jim also wants the radiator hose from the box van. Daryl has grown impatient, and Shane tells him he hates he's doing this, but he's taking bullets. He gives him four bullets to take on the trip. The truck drives away, and Lori consoles Carl, saying they'll be fine. He says he's not worried. Are you? Carl says nothing's killed him yet. He'll be fine. And they hold hands. Glenn parks on the train tracks and says they walk from here. Shane is trying to teach Carl to catch frogs to no success, so he kicks it old school. He creates a ruckus with a bucket and splashing in the water, which yields no success. Glenn says we get Merle first, as the women talk about all the appliances they miss, the washing machine, coffee maker, and of course vibrators. Ed's being a dickhead to the ladies as Lori scolds Carl for leaving Dale's sight. Shane and Lori argue. She says her family is off limits to him. She calls him out for being fake happy. Grimes is back. Shane told her he died. The men are back in the building and Daryl drops a lady walker. Andrea calls out Ed for hovering and he tells his wife Carol to come on. He tells Andrea he'll knock her out as the other ladies call him out. Ed smacks Carol and Shane intervenes. He beats his ass and the women cry and beg him to stop. He tells Ed if he does it again, he won't stop next time. I'll beat you to death. Carol runs to him crying, saying she's sorry. The four men make it to the chain and cut it. They make it to Merle, but see, he's gone. Daryl cries as they see a hacksaw in his hand left behind. And that's the ending. Brian, what'd you think?
Yeah, just a couple of stuff that's kind of sidebars. But a little fun fact, the quarry location for this episode's setting is the Bellwood Quarry in Atlanta, Georgia. It's also seen in episode 4, which we're about to get to. But the same setting can also be seen in Dustin's favorite number one show. He's probably next pick, Stranger Things.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what else the show has made me have a new respect for, and again, another sidebar, and that's the slow zombie. Like, I've made it clear. I mean, I picked Dawn of the Dead remake way back in, like, our first few episodes ever, and I made it clear, like, sure, like, I've had zero respect for the slow zombie. I could barely watch any movies that didn't have the fast zombie or that rage zombie, but this show has helped me put some respect on their name for me. Yeah. Now, like I said, also, it's no secret, I don't like Shane as well. I fucking hate that guy, but man, Dustin, you mentioned it, him beating the ever living fuck out of Ed. I mean, he just beat the shit out of him and I love to see it. And so just so I'm clear, the zombies apparently just squeezed through that space on, you know, in the roof where there was deadbolted. That door was deadbolted on the roof there. And then they just, what? They fell off the top? Like, where did they all go? Like, just some questions.
They didn't get through.
They didn't get through at all.
According to T-Dog, the hallway was too narrow for too many of them to get against the door and break the chain, so they would give up. That's what I remember T-Dog saying.
Yeah, he said that. I guess
the very opening scene made it seem like to me that they were getting through that little space.
I think it was just to show you that the threat, because if you look, I mean, that chain wasn't given. It didn't look like it was given. But still, from Merle's perspective, you don't know that chain's not going to give. You don't know.
Okay. All right.
You know, so, yeah.
I get that. Okay, not a bad episode. It felt a little, you know, like it was trying to establish some characters, like Dustin mentioned, and that's needed. You know, on its own, though, like as an episode, meh. But coupled with the next episode, I think it's a nice complimentary one there.
Yeah. So Daryl honking the horn to get Rick to go, that's very uncharacteristic for him in this show to me. Like, he's usually smarter than that. I don't think that later Daryl would honk the horn and, you know, cause all this noise. So that
plus he's standing right at the end of the box truck with the door open and he's right there. So he leaves, walks further to go honk that horn than to just yell at Rick, I think. Right. I mean,
yeah, you're right. So I think it was just, they just put it in there to show us how, you know, show us Daryl's urgency. He wanted to go, let's go, let's go, let's go. But it was unneeded and uncharacteristic. And I know I hate Shane's character, but it was a cool moment with him catching frogs with Carl. Like, you can tell at least he cares about Carl, even if he doesn't give a shit about his best friend, Rick. Then Ed picked the wrong day to beat his wife. I mean, there's never a right day, but Shane took out all of his anger and frustration from Lori out on him. Hell yeah, brother. I know what I said last set of scenes about Shane's comedy being my favorite thing of Shane in this show, but this is my favorite thing. He beat the fuck out of him. I love how they revealed Merle's hand because they didn't show it immediately and they just showed Daryl freaking out. It kind of made you think maybe he had been eaten, but it was a very effective cliffhanger to end on. And
yeah,
this is, like I said, this is an episode that's going to establish some things with characters and progress the story. So I'm not mad at it.
Brother, you saying there's never a good day to beat your wife, but I don't know why it cracked me up so much. Did y'all have any fun facts or any thoughts on episode 3 before you jump into episode 4?
No, I guess I took all of Dustin's. Sorry.
No, you're good, man.
I liked episode 3 better than 4. I thought, I'll get to it at the end. But 4 wasn't bad. Episode 4, Vatos. Episode starts with Amy and Andrea fishing in a canoe on a beautiful body of water. They're arguing about knots that Dad taught them to tie and the different type of lures they were taught to use to fish. They're surprised they were taught differently. They start to cry, reflecting on everything. They get a bite, but don't try and catch it. Too busy being emotional. Dale is watching everything through binoculars as we see Jim digging up graves. Daryl pulls the bow on T-Dog, and Grimes pulls his gun on Daryl. Daryl picks his hand up, wraps it in a bandana, and stores it in Glenn's backpack. They follow the blood trail, calling out for Merle. Dale checks on Jim, who's digging his ass off, and offers him water. Daryl's impressed he was able to take out two walkers, toughest son of a bitch he ever met. The ladies bring home a mess of fish, and the community is very thankful. Dale lets everyone know they might have a problem as he points at Jim. The guys find the area where Merle cauterized his wound. Grimes calms Daryl down and offers to help search a few blocks. T-Dog agrees, but they need the guns first. The community checks on Jim, asking what he's digging. Lori tells him that he's scaring their kids acting this way. Shane tries to reason with him, and Jim calls him out, "Who made him boss?" He swings a shovel at him, and Shane apprehends him and cuffs him. Jim tells him about his wife and two boys being eaten, and he only got away because they were too busy eating his family. Very, very heart-wrenching scene there with Jim. Brian, what did you think of that first set of scenes?
This episode, to me, definitely picks up with the action. I do like how it gives, my favorite character in the show up to this point, Miss Emma Bell, some screen time. Surely nothing will happen to her, I'm sure. I'm not a fan of Andrea, though. That never changes, to be honest. But at least it does a decent job here of establishing their family relationship. I thought it did a pretty decent job of that. Fun little fact, too. I mentioned last episode about this whole thing about being based on Robert Kirkman's comics. Kirkman actually got a chance to get his first writing credit on the series for this episode. He said he was delighted he got a chance to write one of the first major deaths of a couple of characters. Surely not Amy. I'm just going to hopefully that doesn't happen. And I didn't notice at first. Nico, actually, I will credit him for pointing it out to me because we were talking a little bit about it on a trip this past weekend. But he pointed out our guy, Noel Guglielmi, but who I know he's been on our show previously from Three from Hell and Purge Anarchy for sure, but Hector from Fast and the Furious, and literally an IMDb page as long as a CVS receipt, just to say. And am I wrong? We never really find out why Jim is going crazy and digging graves, right? I mean, he just was kind of going crazy,
He said he has a dream and he saw people. He can't remember why he was digging the holes, but he had a dream that he was supposed to dig the holes. And then I'll go ahead and say it now. Later in the episode, like at the end, he says, "Oh, yeah, I remember why I was digging all the graves."
Oh, okay. Well, I thought he was just rambling. Like, I wasn't sure if that was, like, the real true reason. Like, he really did it because of a dream. That's interesting. Okay. Anyway, so I did hear why he did it, though. Anyway, not a huge fan of that little, I don't know, for Jim's little chaos for chaos sake there, I guess, just to be honest. By the way, for you fans of Red Dead Redemption video game, Andrew Gothenburg, who plays Jim, voice of Lindsay Wofford in that game.
Hell yeah. Elite game. It's a touching moment in the boat with Andrea and Amy, but I got to admit, I don't care about either of these characters at all. At this point in the show, at least. Whoa. And then later, I do care about Andrea. It's because I hate her so much. Some great foreshadowing, though, when Andrea tells Amy, "I think you have a bite." It's like, ooh. I like how that line was thrown in there based on what happens in this episode. And a great head-scratcher before the opening credits with Jim just digging holes like his name was Stanley Yelnats. Love that. We get a great look at Daryl's intelligence and ability to deduce from what he sees when he points out the lack of blood. And how he must have used a tourniquet. It's very common for his character. Like, he's very savvy when it comes to that sort of thing. And then talk about a tough thing to live with. The only reason I got away is because the dead were busy eating my family. Sheesh. Like, holy shit. That's rough, man. So, even if he didn't have the dream, I could understand Jim losing his fucking mind because I don't know how someone could live with that. But it's another strong open for me.
Well, that's kind of like the opening of 28 Weeks Later, where that dude just like dips out because the zombies are eating his family. And
yeah. The inaugural Man Fuck Them Kids Award. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was. And actually, 28 Days Later, the scene with Rick in the hospital kind of reminds me of 28 Days Later, now, for being honest.
Yeah.
All right, Glenn is making his pitch to get the guns with Daryl. He shows a makeshift map of the area, and they're quite impressed with his know-how. They're shocked to find out all he did was deliver pizzas. The four split up to get the guns. Daryl says he's got balls to be a Chinaman, who's actually Korean. And I just wrote, I know your pain, brother. Daryl pulls the bow on a guy who keeps crying out for Ayudame. Daryl is jumped by two other men as Glenn appears. They jump Glenn to take his bag, but Felipe is shot in the leg with a bow. The men kidnap Glenn and speed off. Grimes gets the gun bag and they run off with the new guy. Shane gives Jim some water, who is tied to a tree in the shade. He asks how long he's going to be kept like this. Jim apologizes to the kids and asks if they're scared of him. Jim asks Carl if he is worried about his dad. He says he's tough as nails. He could see it in him. There's nothing going to stop him from getting back. Shane has Carl and Sophia help him clean some fish, and Lori goes over to Jim. He tells her to keep her boy close. Don't let him out of your sight. The three guys interrogate the guy who ain't talking to them. Daryl throws the hand at the kid and scares him to death. Grimes says they just want to talk and work something out. He leads the three men to try and get Glenn back. Guillermo and Felipe exit the door and ask if it's true about cutting off his feet. Guillermo wants the bag of guns and threatens to unload on them. We see Glenn bound standing on the roof, and Guillermo says, come back with Miguel and my bag of guns or expect a bloodbath. Daryl and T-Dog are hesitant to give the guns up, not trusting Guillermo's word. Grimes says he owes Glenn his life. Grimes tells him to go back to camp, but they get guns themselves. All right, Brian, the next set of scenes, what'd you think?
Honestly, I love the twist that we get with Guillermo and his crew. Like, totally, in my opinion, unexpected. I thought that was a brilliant plot twist. Great writing from Kirkman there. By the way, Johan Rennick is the director of this one. Honestly, just another plug-and-play director. I just wanted to point that out. I don't know if that sounds shitty of me to say, but again, it's just nothing really stand out either way in that department, and from being honest, and that's not always a bad thing. But I do love that twist with the old folks home and this crew not being that stereotypical gang that you expected. I loved it. And great tension there with the standoff, I thought, too. Something that bothers me, though, in a lot throughout here and the rest of the series that I've seen, but specifically here, I mean, you're there in Atlanta to retrieve guns. You walk downtown right by tons of machine guns and holstered pistols on dead soldiers and can see ton of M60s sticking up from sandbags. I'm yelling at the screen every time. Just pick up the motherfucking guns. But just a little bit of an editing goof here, too. When the grandmother or abuela appears during the standoff, Rick lowers his rifle to the ground away from Guillermo. In the next shot, there's a jump cut as the rifle is suddenly back up, pointed at him. And then we see Rick lowering the rifle a second time. Editing goofs happen.
All right. So it's funny hearing Glenn say he was just a pizza boy before all this. Bro must have played a ton of Call of Duty. Like, he's all about strategy. And then, yeah, Nico, you mentioned it. You've got some balls for a Chinaman. I'm Korean. Whatever. I can't help but think that's how you must feel in our group chat. But it's all love. We joke, brother. We joke. I know you're Taiwanese. Glenn turning around to grab Rick's hat is great. Without spoiling anything for Nico, Brian, you may have already realized this, but the hat turns into a bit of a character itself throughout the show. And so it's cool seeing, like, this is where, like, he wouldn't even have the fucking hat. Big time oh shit moment when Glenn gets kidnapped and our crew takes Miguel. It's weird seeing Noel Guglielmi playing a character not named Hector. Like you mentioned, Brian, he's Hector in Fast and Furious, but if you look at his IMDb, which you mentioned, there's approximately 3,429 credits on his page. 4% of them are named Hector, so that's right. Funny. I'm not really a fan here when Lori walks over close to Jim and squats down when he told her to keep Carl close. Like, what was the point? She didn't do anything. And when he said that, she just got up and walked away. It was overly dramatic for no reason. If she had walked over there and said something to him or did something for him, maybe give him some water, I don't know, something. But she literally walked over, squatted down, his head turns towards her. He says that and she walks off. Okay. I love Daryl using Merle's hand to intimidate Miguel like that. Like it was from a victim of his. I laugh every single time. That was so fucking funny to me. And then it's very tense as they walk up to the building. Like, you automatically assume the worst is about to happen. Huge relief when you find out in the next set of scenes that Guillermo isn't a bad guy, though. But the negotiations beforehand were perfectly done to make you fear the worst. So, effective set of scenes.
All right, guys, here's the ending. They walk Miguel back to the building bound and enter. Grimes tells him those aren't his guns and frees Miguel, saying he wants Glenn. Everyone pulls their guns on each other and Abuela enters. Guillermo says to leave, but she says Mr. Gilbert is having trouble breathing. He needs his medicine. She asks, who are these men? And says he's a good boy. Grimes is smooth with it and says they're looking for Glenn. She takes Grimes and Guillermo lets them pass. They give Mr. Gilbert his medicine and we see Glenn is in good shape. Grimes and Guillermo converse. Guillermo says the staff abandoned these old people. Only he and Felipe stayed behind to take care of them. Guillermo says his people are those coming to check on their grandparents. He tells Grimes what they do to survive. Everyone looks to him now. Grimes gives him a shotgun and other guns to help them. Daryl is upset they gave so many guns away, and they realize Merle took their van and will go back to camp with a vengeance. Andrea is looking for gift wrap for the jewelry to give Amy for her birthday. Shane checks on Jim and says to join them for the fish fry. Carol checks on Ed, who looks like hell. He continues to be an ass to his family. We're by a fire as they enjoy some fish as Morales asks Dale about winding that watch every single day at the same time. Dale tells a story of a father and son giving him a watch so that you can forget time every now and then, trying not to conquer it. Amy walks off to go pee, and a walker has made it to Ed's tent. Amy is attacked and all hell breaks loose. Shane begins shooting and Grimes realizes what's going on and they sprint towards camp. Andrea cries seeing her sister dying. Grimes and the others arrive and begin killing the walkers. Grimes cries out for his wife and son and they hug. Andrea cries over her sister, not knowing what to do. Amy's eyes close and she passes away. The community is broken seeing Andrea crying over Amy's passing away. Jim says he remembers his dream now and why he dug the holes. All right, Brian, that's the ending. What'd you think?
Fuck the community. I'm broken. But, all right. Sorry, I jumped the gun, too, by the way, on the Abuela. A little fact from last set of scenes, so my bad. But, okay, Jim, we've seen two long conversations between he and Lori. Now, he and Shane, let that motherfucker go. Like, he's fine. Like, that pissed me off. Like, they just kept him chained up for too long. A few things, though. This is the first episode in which we actually see some human characters being eaten by the walkers, which kind of surprises me thinking back. Is that true? I mean, it's kind of hard to remember four seasons ago. I'm just a old vet now, old war-ridden veteran. Anyway, but on that subject, Ed, fine, because fuck him. But Amy, damn, it should have been Andrea. You'll never change my mind on that. Andrea is the one that should have died right there. But some great tension, some great action scenes. I love that this show gives us stakes, you know, not like grilled steaks, stuff to lose. Dad joke, Jordan documentary shrug meme right there. But this show walked so Game of Thrones could run. Actually, I don't know. Maybe that show ran so Game of Thrones could walk. I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. But one thing I found out, if the show were actually mirroring the comics, which obviously it's not, but if it were, this is where Shane would have died. And, you know, as much as I want to punch Shane in the fucking throat, he is good for tension. So they made the right call here, keeping him going on. My favorite episode of the two, for sure, this review. I don't know how the heck you guys watch the show live and waited every week to watch it. So props to you, fans. Great show thus far.
Yeah, I was definitely one of those. What a badass move by Rick to not back down and, you know, from keeping the guns. Major balls. You got guns drawn in your face and you're like, fuck it, let's air it out. Let's all die. That's my kind of energy. The old woman, the abuela coming into the room is a hilarious way to break the tension. Like, I had tears when she thought Rick was there to arrest Felipe. Like, she's oblivious to what's going on in the world and she can't even read the room. That was great. Seeing that the Vatos are basically just running a nursing home is a nice touch. It's refreshing seeing that not everyone's bad. And, you know, it's a great way to drive home. You can't judge a book by its cover. I honestly wonder why Rick doesn't bring his group back there and just join them. Like, there's plenty of room there. There's strength in numbers. They've got guns. They seem to be good people. So that seemed logical and they didn't even try it. I don't know.
Good point.
Weird. I love Glenn's calmness when he said an asthma attack. Like, it's subtly funny to me. That was great. Line delivery was perfect. The van being gone frustrated me. Like, who leaves their keys in a vehicle at a time like this? Obviously, if there's keys in a van, someone's going to steal it. Anyway, but I'm supposed to believe that they ran all the way back. They couldn't steal another vehicle. Come on, son. Not buying that. I hate that every single time. Ed's a dickhead again, and I'm even more pleased with the result this time. Like, he didn't get beaten to, you know, half to death by Shane. It's a Walker buffet. Loved it. But Amy, while I didn't care about her character, that's no fault of her. She didn't deserve that. She didn't deserve it, man. And Brian, you mentioned Greg Nicotero the last episode. Makeup designer Greg Nicotero here played the zombie that bites Amy on the arm. He said that he decided to play the zombie because he knew where to bite. So that's cool. This is the most action we've seen in the show this far, and it's awesome. Holy shit, that's a lot of deaths to people in our main group. Honestly, some of them didn't even get names in the first few episodes. Like, they just, oh, there's someone getting eaten. They were alive, but that's fine. I like it. What a herd. There's so many of them. I'm glued to the TV here during this scene. And then a great way to tie in Jim's dream and why he dug the holes is a very emotional episode ends.
R.I.P. Emma Bell, friend of the show, Emma Bell. Love you. Should have been Andrea.
Definitely.
They both could have just lived, you know. They could have just took Ed out. I've been fine with that. Ed sucked. Ed was horrible.
Yeah.
I was like, God Ed, damn,
Ed was such a... Ed was such a 1950s husband. Like, he's the kind that if dinner's 1 minute late, he's going to, you know, power bomb her through the kitchen table. Like, it's, what a piece of shit.
Yeah, he was terrible. Yeah. Guys, you got any final thoughts on these episodes? I enjoyed both. I did like three a little better than four. I don't know. The four, the Guillermo stuff, like, it had a good payoff, but I didn't really feel like it was too necessary. Did those guys come back in, like, into the story ever?
No.
Yeah, I didn't really need all that. They could have went on without it.
The reason I like that introduction is to show you that there are other groups out there and that, you know, you got to be on high alert at all times because, trust me, Nico, you're going to meet some other groups and you definitely have to be on high alert. So I didn't mind it. And I think it was a good way to establish up front that maybe you can trust some people. Maybe you don't have to be guarded, which could lure Rick into a false sense of security later on. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have anything else. I was just wondering what you thought about them since you did the scene by scene.
Yeah.
I liked episode three a lot. It was emotional. Four, I liked it. I just, like I said, I just didn't really care for that. Like, I get the, I mean, Guillermo, he like, why did he let his guard down just because Abuela took Rick back there? Like, why couldn't he just be nice from the get-go? Like, why are you trying to be a hard ass right now when they didn't have any qualms with him? But, I mean,
the weak get taken.
They're protecting old people, though.
Later on, that's not going to matter. You're going to see that's some bad enough. People in this world. There's some bad people in this world. But I liked episode four. I liked episode four more just because of the action. Like, there's so much action at the end of this episode. That took it over the edge to me.
No, the ending action is good. It was emotional, too. Like, I don't really have any problems with Amy's character. Like, I didn't have any problems with any of them except Ed and Rooker for dropping the hard ER word in the episode one, right? Or episode, whatever it was. But yeah, I enjoyed both episodes, guys. All right, before we get out of here, I just want to give a shout out to our blood donors, Christina Tower, Final Girl Donor. We'll be doing her review in a couple of weeks. I'm excited to watch that movie, The Mist. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J, Nina, Michelle Mirza, The Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorn David Phillips, Heather Superdoc, and to end it off, Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home podcast. If you like true crime, go check her out. She's awesome. We really appreciate all of our blood donors. It takes a big burden off of us. And we appreciate everyone listening. Hope you've been enjoying the Walking Dead. And if y'all would just give me 2 seconds, we actually got a couple of social media comments I'm going to read real quickly on the old Book of Faces. Ramon Rodriguez coming. Are you going to review every episode of the series? That could take a huge undertaking. No, my friend, we're just doing season one for right now. We're going to be bouncing around doing some things. Shout out to Jimbo Fisher.
There you go.
And we also got a comment from Jamil Schmash Jackson. My number one favorite TV show, The Walking Dead. So hearing you all discuss this show is just awesome. Thanks and keep at it, please. It's our pleasure. Shout out to Chick-fil-A. Just kidding. No, I'm enjoying it. Like I mentioned from the get-go, this show is forcing me to watch shows I haven't watched or just put it off. And right. I'm glad you're enjoying it. You know, that's why we wanted to do it, to give you guys more content and for us to push our, you know, get out of our comfort zone a little bit. We appreciate y'all listening. Y'all have a good one.
Just want to remind everybody.